Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Hey, everybody. Tim Miller from The Bulwark here with Bill Kristol. We're doing an impromptu live stream as we have some pretty remarkable numbers coming in out of New York and the New York mayor's race. Before I get to the details on that, I'm going to let people get on in here. Make sure if you've been interested in getting more of your YouTube subscriber to The Bulwark, you want to get ad free. If you want to get some of the bonus content that we offer here on YouTube, you can become a YouTube Plus member, which is for the YouTube sickos. And, you know, we're out here grinding in the content mines. I mean, Bill Kristol is 87 years old. He's putting out more content than most of the competitors in the space. These little 21-year-olds can't even compete with his stamina. So anyway, if you want to see all of that, you can go on YouTube Plus. Bill, that sound about right? You have any other... You're a big YouTube Plus person.
That was great. I'm on YouTube 24/7. You know, barely even sleep. You know what I mean?
You're streaming. All right. Hopefully, folks have gotten in. I wanted to get to the results here. We don't have an official result yet, but all signs point to Zohra Mamdani, the Democratic Socialist candidate, winning the Democratic nomination for mayor in New York. As of the latest numbers I saw, he's winning in this first ballot of this ranked choice voting by a couple percent. He might end up winning this first round by somewhere in the ballpark of 3 to 5%. Maybe even a little more than that. And then you'll go through the ranked choice. We thought this might be something that'll take days, but given that Andrew Cuomo's chief competition was in second, third right now is Brad Lander, who had co-endorsed with Mamdani. So logic would indicate that that most of the Lander support will end up going to Mamdani and that he'll end up winning this one. We have Michael Lang, who I know both of us have been following, has already called it himself, saying that Zohran's going to win. So that's like the top takeaway. If you look at the map, Bill, I want to get your thoughts. And the map tells the story. I'm cribbing this from our friends at Decision Desk HQ, but Cuomo's strong areas are essentially limited to the Orthodox Jewish areas like Borough Park. He also did well in some of the blackest precincts and the precincts that has the highest percentage of black residents. And then a few ultra wealthy neighborhoods around Fifth Avenue. So some of your old folks you went to high school with. So that's not a majority making map there for Cuomo. Zohran does surprisingly well out in Queens, out in Staten Island, like winning half the precincts in some of these areas, doing kind of surprisingly, and obviously he's going to do well in Brooklyn, you know, and maybe the hipster neighborhoods in Queens, but it seems like he did surprisingly well even outside of that. So that's kind of the initial observation on the map. Bill, what do you make of what we've seen so far?
I mean, we should just step back for a minute and what everyone thinks of the result and if there's a policy or implications. It's pretty amazing. I mean, he was at literally 2% in the polls. Not like with Buttigieg, not to minimize Pete's achievement when he ran for president in 2019-20, but not at 2%, you know, a year and a half out. He was at 2% this year in, what, February, I believe, right? He started to move up. But I mean, 3 weeks ago, still, it was, well, gee, he might make a little more of a race of it than we thought. He could be within 10 or 12, maybe with the ranked choice voting then, and Lander being in third place and being endorsing Mamdani. It could be very, very close at the end. It looks to me like he's going to lead by 6-7 points, maybe. Tonight. And then the early vote just on the in the last hour and a half, I mean, the early vote came in and it was about 8 points for Mamdani. And people thought, okay, well, that's kind of what they expected if it was going to be very, very close, because Cuomo would do better on the same day, on the election day vote. The election day vote is held, has barely changed the numbers, actually. I mean, the other thing is, as you said, the breadth, I mean, you exaggerate a little about Cuomo. He is going to end up with, 400,000 votes or something. So it's not like only 12 Orthodox Jews voted for him.
I'm in the precincts he was winning.
People at, 1020 Fifth Avenue or something like that across from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. But still, it is pretty striking, the breadth of, you can't get the number of votes Mamdani is going to get, which is going to be in the low 40% plus range, in a 1.15, maybe 1.2, maybe million voter primary. Yeah. New York City is a big city. People think, oh, it's just one city primary. It's like the size of many states. So it's a lot of people voted. And you can't get that number of votes without getting votes from everyone, including lots of middle class whites, actually, honestly. And not just
interesting
hipsters and ethnic groups and youth. I mean, he obviously must have done overwhelmingly well with young voters. I don't know the city well enough, and I haven't had the time to look at.
By borough. Let me just give you the results by borough right now as it stands. So Cuomo plus 9 in Staten Island. And some of the folks that I was seeing this morning looking at projections were like, you'd win by 40.
Yeah.
So you are obviously doing well with working class voters in Staten Island. In the Bronx, Cuomo is plus 18. Mamdani is winning in Queens with 90% in. That was and then I think that was kind of expected that he would win narrowly in Manhattan, which he has, and then roll up in Brooklyn. So, it is, I think the surprising result does come, kind of in those outer boroughs where it was thought that Cuomo would do much better.
Yeah, it must mean he won. Those outer boroughs have a lot of different diverse groups and a lot of hipsters in Brooklyn. There's a fun part that I guess some of the New York political pros dubbed the commie corridor, which is the hipster areas through Brooklyn. And so it's not like Manhattan is, it's not like Greenwich Village is the only hip place in New York anymore, anything like that. So it is a little more complicated to look borough by borough. But basically, Cuomo had to win Queens. His father was from Queens. The Cuomo family, has won a lot of elections in Queens over 40, 50 years. And in that respect, that Mamdani looks like he's going to actually defeat Cuomo in Queens, the more conservative people would usually say of the big four boroughs, Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn, is pretty astonishing. It shows the degree of revulsion that it shows that Mamdani ran an extremely effective campaign. And I want to hear you, since you interviewed him, I want to hear from you about that.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that.
But it also shows that people wanted change and they did not want a 67-year-old almost three-term governor of New York who left, he had to resign in disgrace and just decided to come back to the city, which he didn't like much, and bestow upon the city the gift of his mayorship, which he didn't seem to want to work very hard for. I mean, it is a kind of, in that respect, this is a novelistic situation, don't you think? I mean, if you were, this is one of the, of all the races you've seen, I've seen, I feel like this one fits the most in a kind of well-written political novel, where you begin.
Oh, yeah. And the characters, how would you even have written it? I'm on Donnie just in a lot of ways. And I think JVL wrote this, is kind of a caricature of what like a National Review Republican would think of a left person, right? So like, could he is a kind of a fictional character, and then Cuomo is such a character.
He's Muslim. Yeah. He was born in Uganda. His mother's from India, I believe. I mean,
he went to Bowdoin. Yeah. And Cuomo is such a caricature. I mean, obviously the sex pest element, but he's a Nepo baby. I like the whole thing all the way down. You kept talking about the hipster neighborhoods, Bill, and I think that we might be able to kind of create a hipster index based on the percent victory of Mamdani. I'm looking at his biggest neighborhoods. He's winning Ridgewoods plus 69. Nice. Bushwick plus 66. East Williamsburg plus 61. Greenpoint plus 57. Up in Astoria. The hipsters are moving up to Astoria now. Plus 52. Bed-Stuy plus 43. I mean, I think that sort of tells the story. East Village plus 37. If you look at the Cuomo side, I mean, he's running up the score up in like Far Rockaway, places like that. So
but also, I looked at where I grew up, Cuomo's winning the Upper West Side, which is actually a little considerably ritzier than when I lived there. But he's not slaughtering Mamdani there. And when you add the Lander vote, and he's cost endorsed with Mamdani, the controller, Jewish, so has that appeal to the Upper West Side. It's even with or a little bit ahead of. So on ranked choice voting, let's put it this way, when we get to the final round, Mamdani will be close to even in places with
Cuomo. Yeah, might win.
like the Upper West Side.
Almost only plus
still
four.
Lose the Upper East Side. So you're still right about the Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue, folks. Yeah. They're not. I don't know. There must be. I mean, I've been texting with a few of my friends. My friends in New York are didn't like Cuomo, but basically did not vote for Mamdani, so they were Cuomo voters, or at least put Cuomo on their rank and didn't put Mamdani.
Or conscientious objectors, Zellner Myrie voters.
Yeah. And they seem to be taking it okay so far. I mean, they're all
okay. Well, that's good. Here's
looking,
what I want to say: some
property in the suburbs. I mean, listen.
well, their tax rate's going to go up, we'll see. They'll have that. They'll have the free grocery store that they'll be able to go to. I want to say that. Well, one other thing, just about how astonishing it is, that what Zohran overcame, is in addition to all things you said about the Cuomo name, about how low he was in the polls, Cuomo had just burned a ton of money. And there was a ton of cash on TV, swamped Mamdani on the financial side. And this is kind of a little pet issue of mine, that the TV ad campaign just ain't working like it used to. And you saw this in the GOP primary. I was always banging the drum about DeSantis. People, especially in these high impact races where people are paying attention, they're getting their information from these things, not from the TV ads. And so a lot of rich New Yorkers blew a lot of cash on Cuomo's TV ads. So sucks to be you. They probably should have circled the wagon around a better person. Yeah, go ahead.
One point out to that, they ran up massively, the super PACs, Bloomberg put in $8 million and stuff, in the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. It's very, a lot of evidence now from the polling that Mamdani gained in the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. And the best proof of that is that his election day vote was almost as good as his early vote, which is, those are the late break must have been, when they asked that question on the presidential election polls, when did you decide? I bet. You're absolutely right. The TV ads did no good. And if anything, were a contrarian indicator.
Yeah. Tough break. So here's what I want to say about Zohran. And, because, Zohran's gotten the business around here from some of our colleagues in particular. And I, when I interviewed him, I had a chance to ask him about all the things I was concerned about with him from a policy standpoint. Some of the stuff that didn't get attention is stuff I cared more about, which was, particularly the kind of the track record of mayors such as him, of progressive mayors. If you look at Brandon Johnson in Chicago, he's doing a horrible job. And even most Democrats think he's doing a horrible job. And so I was concerned, is he going to be able to kind of to go against the grain in a way that some others haven't? We might have a chance to see, it turns out, though he'll have a general election against probably Eric Adams, maybe Andrew Cuomo again. But if Andrew Cuomo gets embarrassed tonight, I would be kind of surprised if he ran again, but we'll see. But here's what I was impressed with Zohran. And I have been out here saying to any Democrat that will listen, they're all running old playbooks, and that in big time races, maybe it's different in House races, and they're different. Abigail Spanberger, I think, has a different calculus in Virginia because there are a lot of things happening in Virginia. But in these competitive, high profile races, they need to start running more modern campaigns, both tactically, which means going on freewheeling podcasts and showing your personality, being authentic, taking hard questions, not being scared of talking to my ass and having Cam Caskey be your fanboy on the side, right? Like doing it, letting it rip, showing people that you're a real person. For all of the little controversy that surrounded it afterwards, I heard from a lot of people who are not your prototypical Zohran voter who listened to it and were like, oh, he was better than I expected, right? Like that stuff matters. People care about that stuff now. You should have the balls to go out and make a case and be yourself and go into hostile territories, go everywhere, as my friend Liz Smith says, who is Pete's advisor. Zohran did that. Like he went everywhere. He did Derek Thompson in my podcast. He did Come Town. Like he did all of the things. He was out there. Number two, put at the center of the campaign, not the identity stuff, working class concerns. He did that. He campaigned like he was a man of the people. Andrew Cuomo, literally, this stuff is kind of stupid when it comes to actual governance, but this stuff matters in campaigns. Andrew Cuomo took a car five blocks from the house that he's staying in, I don't think he even lives in Manhattan right now, to his voting place today. He like had a driver and got out of the backseat of the car. Zohran, I think it was last night or maybe two nights ago, walked the length of Manhattan, right, was fist bumping guys. They're taking videos. Some people were shouting bullshit at him. He was shouting bullshit back. That is real. Like, that shows that you're willing to humble yourself, to like, to be a Democratic politician that's among the people, that cares about working class people. He is also able to break through the kind of political chattering class to folks who are outside of that. Like, any Democrat can do this. I got into a little argument with one of like a DSA type advisor on Twitter last night, who was like, you can only do that if you're a Democratic socialist, like you have to be the whole package. I disagree with that. I was like, any Democrat could do this. Maybe it wouldn't resonate quite as much as he did with certain demos, for sure. But any Democrat could, you know, focus on working class issues, could get outside the bubble, could stop campaigning so cautiously, you know, could let it rip a little more, could learn a little bit from Trump's tactics. Not that Zohran and Trump are anything alike, but or like just with that, like being yourself and not like caring about, like, not being cautious about your words. And that's what people want now. And for him, it resonated. And it's great. And I think that despite my disagreements with him and my deep skepticism that he'll actually be a good mayor, we will see if he gets that chance. Like, people got excited, and the Democrats have had a long period of not exciting anybody. And I think that if they thought they were going to put up Andrew Cuomo's corpse and jack him through with TV ads, sorry, like that doesn't work anymore. And I hope that Zohran's campaign is a lesson to people of all ideologies on the left about like how to run a campaign in the year 2025, not in 2003.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think as a person, I didn't follow. I haven't seen him that much. I saw him on your interview. You know, I'm not inclined to think that a lot of the, you know, the standard, you know, lefty sort of socialist policies that he is, I don't quite know how much he cares about a lot of those, but I guess they're sort of close to his heart, you know, and those aren't going to work, right? Rent control and the public use supermarket, just because the regular supermarkets are gouging everyone. I don't know. I mean, I bet the margins for supermarkets in New York City are not widely very high. So I don't know. I think a lot of this is going to work. I'm not happy about the bringing the Intifada home, or what's the right?
Yeah, globalizing the Intifada. You don't think we should have an Intifada in New York, in Queens,
where there was
Plum? No, totally. It was a terrible answer.
A terrible answer, and he believes it, which is kind of is it good or bad that he believes it, as opposed to just sort of saying it because some of his audiences want to hear it. But I don't know. Is that going to affect what he actually does as mayor? I mean, it's a pretty, you know, he's going to have to get along with the big institutions in New York. He seems like a very interesting person, though, I've got to say. You know, I mean, I was struck also by the, not so, also, he walked 10 miles to Manhattan on Friday afternoon and evening. Yeah. Manhattan's a very long actual island, and so it's a long walk. And it's very diverse, you know. There's some very poor, a lot of Hispanic neighborhoods up north, and then Harlem, well, parts of Harlem, and then Columbia, and then the Upper West Side of it. And he just did, the interactions, I watched some clips after your interview, I was curious, and he's very good. I mean, some of this is just being a good politician. You know, some of this is Bill Clinton and sure, AOC and other people who are just talented pals, right? And he is. And he's been in politics for a while, right? I mean, he's already been in the state assembly for
part about being a good politician is just being comfortable in your own skin.
Totally.
And part about being comfortable in your own skin is just being let to be comfortable in your own skin. And I think that that is something that, you know, you can't teach it to some people. Jeb just naturally wasn't that comfortable in his own skin. George W. was, right? So some of it is innate, but some of it is like, I don't know. Their example, I think that there are examples of folks who have been made, and I think Kamala is an example of somebody who is more cautious than she needed to be.
And being a huge underdog helped in a way, because what was there to lose?
For sure.
So why not just, you know?
True. Though I also worked for John Huntsman as a huge underdog who was very uncomfortable in his own skin. So, you know, it's not a guarantee.
What about the interview? I mean, so I saw the interview, but what struck you as, you know, you dealt with them a little before and after, and just kind of the whole process of it? You've done so many of these now. What struck you just as a kind of, in that respect, in the 45 minutes?
I'm going to answer that question, but we do have some breaking news. Andrew Cuomo has conceded to Zora Mandani. So he is going to, I mean, there was some discussion.
He's this not thing. Waiting for the, that's amazing. If there's all this press, it's going to be a week till we get the, all the, some old, you know, mail, late mail ballots in. And that's when the ranked choice, they don't even announce the ranked choice calculations, you know, that the computers do until a week from now. So he's conceding the actual final vote a week before people even expected to know the result, you know?
Wild. So, and I think that also signals to me that he's not going to try to run on one of these goofy lines in the general, but who knows? I don't know. Egomaniacs will do what egomaniacs want to do. My answer to your question about what struck me about Zoran is I want to put the globalized intifada answer to the side here because the way in which it was different, I think, is telling.
Yeah.
On all of the other answers, you know, I did the thing with Cam where it was good twink, bad twink, where I was asking the hard questions. You know, he was asking these two ones. On all of the hard questions, you could tell that he had actually thought about what the critique was of the left and had come up with a smart answer to it. Was it an answer like, if he wins the mayorship, if he wins the general, we'll see whether he actually follows up. But on the question of how too much red tape and too much, you know, regulation and how, you know, I asked him about how Mayor Johnson in Chicago, it's like when you build to get new affordable housing units, he had a point system where it was like, if you were a BIPOC, you got 11 points. But if you were able to save money, you only got 3 points. And so like all this stuff that just makes everything cost more than it needs to and makes increases price for everybody. He had a lot of very good thoughts about that. Thoughts about, you know, how they're overpaying consultants. You could tell he's trying to get me, you know, like appeal to me about how he was like, I, as a progressive, I want this to be more efficient government. We shouldn't let the Elon own Doge. Like we should want to be efficient because we want government to go. You know, on that sort of stuff, he was like, I think more malleable than you see sometimes from folks, DSA type folks. I thought that was interesting. He also was extremely affable and extremely easy to get along with is the other thing, just to the extent that this matters. Like, you know, I have politicians, I learned the most from them in the 2 minutes before we go on, right, and the 2 minutes after, right? Because a lot of them are dicks or like very cold. He was like, he was chilling. He was hanging. He was very comfortable. And I think that was impressive. The inability to offer the malleable answer on globalized intifada to me was less a sign that like he's an anti-Semite or he hates Jews. I'll let other people out. That's not my fight. To me, it was a sign that that was an area where he didn't want to pick a fight with his core base, which was a lot of the folks that have been out there protesting, what he'd been out there at the protests. And to me, that would worry me a little bit about him as a mayor. If he's not going to pick a fight with like the activist groups when it's called for, I mean, sometimes it's not called for, sometimes he'll be aligned with them. That doesn't particularly augur well, right? Because just if you're going to be a fucking mayor of New York, it's a shit job. You know, there'd be people complaining from your left, from your right, from your center, from your up. And it just, he seemed reluctant to just say something that he thought might upset the core base. And to me, that was like the red flag of that interview more than, even though I really dislike the phrase globalized intifada, but the substance of it, I also disagreed with. But like projecting out to being a mayor, like that was the one part of the interview I thought was kind of a red flag.
And I suppose one test, an interesting thing will be, what will he do in the next few days? I mean, he'll obviously celebrate and is with his supporters as he should and praise them and all the thank them for their hard work. Will he, this would be in a way both conventional, but I think in this case, the right thing to do, which would be, will he go meet with Jewish leader, you know, will he call together a meeting of the Jewish kind of establishments in New York and rabbis, but also business types, all this and the, you know, Jewish Federation, and sort of say, look, we're going to differ on some things, and maybe on foreign policy, I'm mayor, so I'm not going to have really much to do with it, but I don't agree with you guys who are so pro-Israel, frankly, and fine, but I'm going to be diligent in protecting equal rights from everyone. Synagogues deserve the same protection as everyone else does, and from police, if Jews are being harassed, they shouldn't be harassed. I mean, I think it'd be important. He could get a lot of credit for saying pretty mild things that are basically everyone should believe, you know,
sure,
equal protection for Jewish students and Jewish Jews and neighborhoods and so forth. He doesn't have to go cater to the most extreme, you know, the people, you know, the most extreme people on the Jewish right, so to speak. I think that would help him. I think it would also take the edge off the globalized intifada thing. And actually, honestly, would suggest that maybe he could be a good mayor. I was thinking about the mayor thing. I mean, he's so young, it's just hard to know. I mean, I think a lot of these very progressive mayors, I'll make a weird suggestion. These progressive mayors have not done well, basically. And partly it's because being progressive these days is a combination of, in my view, slightly wacky economic policies and so forth and crime and criminal justice policies, but also the identity politics stuff, which you alluded to in the case of Chicago. In a funny way, being a socialist could, I mean, real quote socialist, but he is a quote socialist. He's like literally a member of the Democratic Socialists. Could free him from some of that. I mean, in a way, they should look. So, being a socialist means you sort of believe in more equality, and you believe in government should do a fair amount to make certain things happen, and housing and other areas. But it also doesn't necessarily imply quite the 2020-ish. You know,
you can free yourself from the shackles of the identity politics.
Yes, and also some of the other progressive, just kind of silly, that you know, all that massive regulatory bullshit that Matt Iglesias and everyone correctly complain about wasn't created really by that was created by liberals who were, you know, I'm an environmentalist. We can't build anything for 8 years here. We have to be very careful about knocking over one, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, zoning, all that. He could be much more in a funny way. And he has sort of reached out. My impression is you follow the campaign more than I, to the abundance, you know,
for sure,
theorists, which is the centrist Democratic position, really, which is anti-red tape, anti-excessive regulation. Yeah. Let's, you know, we built the Empire State Building back in 1931, where the mayor of New York was pretty left-wing, kind of called himself maybe even occasionally a socialist, LaGuardia. I think it was LaGuardia, and they built the building in a year and 2 months or something because they didn't have all these regulations. I mean, there's, you know, there's a kind of way in which you, I don't know, could he turn that into a forward-looking, not, you know, genuinely progressive kind of liberalism as opposed to just catering to a ton of groups and putting even more of a foot on the pedal for doing anything, you know, a lot of things for the city. I don't know.
I wouldn't bet on it, but maybe. I've got Derek Thompson, who wrote the Abundance book, on the pod tomorrow, and so I'm interested to talk to him about it. He also interviewed Zohran, and they had talked about this concept called sewer socialism, which is kind of like a socialist that's focused more on, like, you know, fixing the sewer, like making
sewer
things
socialism,
work.
I know this because I looked this up an hour ago. So I thought, you know what? When we started to win, I thought, I wonder who's the last socialist mayor of a big city in New York? I had this vague memory. Milwaukee was the last one to have had one. They had several, a couple in the 20th century, interestingly, German socialists. And the Frank Zeidler, I think it's Zeidler, 1948 to 1960, was a successful three-term socialist mayor of Milwaukee. That's not like ancient times, right? 48 to 60.
And in fact,
well, it is for you, but not for me. I remember a lot of it vividly. And the Milwaukee Braves were there.
Mother was born in 59.
Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, Warren Spahn in Spain. I mean, it was a great moment. Anyway, Milwaukee had a pretty good three 12 years there, as I understand it. A lot of modernization. And the term sewer socialism, I believe, comes from his mayoralty, actually, this last socialist mayor, who was a kind of get things done sort of socialist. And so anyway, just started.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
No, that's what I wrote. That's interesting. This is what you're here for, Bill, to bring this historic. Is more of the political history, which is I know we have a lot of Zohran fans who've come in to watch this. And some of them, I think, wanted us to cry or something. I'm not that sad. So I'm happy. Welcome to the Zohran fans. Except for I saw one person with a free Luigi comment down there. This is not the safe space for that. Okay. We do not support murder here at the Bulwark. If you're a free Luigi man, I don't know, the Hasanabi or the Breaking Points feed are available for you. But we can hash about but before everybody gets dancing too hard, the example that I came up with was in Buffalo, just up from New York. They had the Democrats had elected, I think it might have been a DSA person. I can't remember if it was a valid socialist or not, but a DSA style, a Zohran style candidate. And then everybody kind of circled the wagons around a more centrist kind of independent candidate who ended up winning in the general election. And that could very well happen with Eric Adams. As crazy as that sounds, it could happen with Eric Adams. And I think at this point you'd have to make Zohran a favorite, but the fight's still there. Dan Pfeiffer 100% concurs with me. So I get nervous when I'm on the same page as Dan Pfeiffer, former Obama communications director, but he wrote this. This results a blaringly loud message to those in the Dem establishment who still cling to old politics, recite focus group talking points, and are too afraid to say what needs to be said. We have a lot to learn from Zohran Mamdani and his campaign. To that point, you have not, one of the things we wanted to get to check off on this pod is I wanted you to rant about how fucking weak the Democratic establishment was, that they ended up choosing Andrew Cuomo as their horse, and that they've been totally incapable of doing a lot of things. And this is just kind of the latest example of it. But why don't you cook on that for a second?
Yeah. So just to be clear to all these people who are flocking, I guess, to this podcast in high excitement, I wouldn't have voted, would not have voted for Mamdani.
I think they know. I think that's why they're here.
They can be surprised. I'm woke these days.
You are woke.
I'm concerned about it. I do think, on this, Adams, on this question of the general election and stuff, one way to stop that from happening, I do think, would be to reassure people, not by selling out any of his principles or changing who he is, but by reassuring people that he does believe in, obviously, in public safety and equal justice, that he's not going to be on some kind of vendetta against, you know, Jewish organizations or Jewish student groups or anything like that, and showing, you know, just kind of what Eddie Mayer would do, reach out to all the constituencies, including those that didn't support him. He needs to sound a little like George H.W. Bush did after the election, whatever. I'm going to be, you know, mayor of all the people or whatever. Yeah. So I think he'll do that. Maybe he's doing it right now or in a few minutes. But having said that, so you can blame the voters of New York. You can blame all those, I guess, Gen Z millennial types and all this for voting from the hipsters and the down the comedy corridor there and the parts of Brooklyn. When I hear the names, I still think of them.
Just for a laugh, Andrew Cuomo during his concession speech said of Zohran, he touched young people. See, this is why the establishment shouldn't have circled their wagons around at sex pest. That's not a great quote, Andrew. Anyway, I'm sorry about the video.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that'll confirm, I think, the 44% or whatever who voted for Zora and the 63% who didn't vote for Cuomo, that they made the right decision today. Yeah, that's kind of amazing. So I think he can avert the fate that happened to that fellow in Buffalo. I mean, if Soren sounds like a real lunatic, it isn't inconceivable that you could get, I mean, you got 44% of the vote the first round, you didn't get 50. It was the Democratic primary. There are still 20, 25, it's a small Republican party in New York, but there's some 20%, 25% of the vote that's just out there.
Yeah.
It's going to be available to an anti-Soren candidate to start with. And it could be Adams, it could be the Republican candidate, this guy Sliwa.
With the hats, it's not going to be the Republican guy with the hats.
So he'll say
Adams, the other problem Adams is having is that he corrupted. Cuts the deal with Trump. Well, I mean, just as a practical problem, like, he cut a deal with Trump to help him on the immigration deportations. And so in New York City, you know, might have moved a little bit more towards Trump this time than it did last time. But you can't run, you can't win as mayor of New York running as a pro-Trump person. So I think that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah, only if you can totally demonize the opposite, the opponent, which they'll try to do, incidentally. But anyway, it's a lot depends. Assuming Zohran is, he seems like a very competent politician, so I'm going to assume he handles this fine and most likely wins. Democrat, but so you can blame the voters. Or the Democratic establishment types can blame themselves. And I guess I am just astonished that they let the alternative become Cuomo. There were other people running who were sort of serious people. They could have all banded behind one of those people. They could have recruited someone in, a business type, a Bloomberg type or something, if they wanted, or any young man, Richie Torres, they could have made him run, right? I mean, it's the kind of more moderate, young, hip candidate. There are plenty of people around, and they sort of, I dealt with them a little bit, and they were kind of, this guy doesn't want to do it, and it's very expensive. And yeah, I was with someone, I shouldn't even say who, but interesting, not a well-known person, but an interesting 45-year-old business person, would have been, never run, but the kind of person you could imagine really taking off if guy got some airtime and so forth. And this person talked to people about doing it, but no one is really willing to step up. It looks like Cuomo's going to run. And, oh, it's too expensive to try to be Cuomo. And the name is so strong, and he's got some of the old guys behind him from the old days. And I mean, there was this pathetic passivity. You know, this is New York, right? I mean, how much money is there in New York? How many people are there who should care about the future of New York, who are now going to lament the future of New York? And they gave a little money at the end to the Cuomo super PAC so they could waste $25 million on ads, as you said earlier.
Absurd.
And that's what they did. And incidentally, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, they're both from New York City. It's the first time, I don't know, maybe in American history, where the speaker, the minority leader, the majority leader,
the minority leader,
you know what I mean, and the minority leader of the Senate are both from New York City, maybe not the first time, certainly rare. And they couldn't, like, get themselves and 20 donors together and say, hey, this, we can't have Cuomo. this 33-year-old is a nice kid, but he can't become mayor this time. And so we have to do something else. I don't know. If a political party can't, that's what parties do. I mean, what is the case for political parties? It's not that they're full of policy geniuses. It's not that they're, you know, the most upstanding, wonderful civic organizations in the world. It's that in the crunch, they can make some tough decisions and do some, stop the bad things from happening and get some serious people into these races and support them.
The DNC is running a YouTube competitor of ours right now, which is like a Potemkin North Korean style fake news effort. So I think that's what the DNC was up to. Look, here's the, if you just combine all these things, it just as this race is a microcosm of the broader problem for the Democratic establishment, they put up a guy way past his prime and everybody circled the wagons around him. They ran the, they ran a campaign straight out of 1998 with Andrew Cuomo, where it's like literally like he ran a fucking Rose Garden campaign for mayor of New York when he hasn't even lived in New York for a while. They did not, they refused to have any kind of creative thinking about what the potential options are. And they let a populist upstart candidate just run circles around them, and he absolutely deserved to win just purely based on the campaign mechanics of it. Like he just totally did, and it just shows how feckless and weak the Democratic establishment is and uncreative. Like, you know, to your point about the Cuomo, it's like, oh, we're just gonna, we'll settle for it. You know, if you're just, if you put yourself in the head of like the big donors and the big strategists in New York, and it's like, oh, well, what are we going to do without Cuomo? Cuomo could have got, could have been beaten. You know, they put up a dynamic center left candidate with name ID with money behind them. They could have run Cuomo into the, Zoran ran Cuomo on the ground doing TikToks and doing podcasts and walking down the street. You know, like they could have run Cuomo into the ground earlier. He was a horrible candidate. It was a moral abomination that they got behind him. And I don't know. Hopefully it's a wake up call for them. And because, man, they got their butt whooped by Zoran tonight.
And it's going to be interesting. I mean, these elections, it's very unpredictable. Often an election is an election. It happens. Sure. A city gets a mayor for 4 years. It has no great national significance. But it's sort of interesting with the San Francisco election. I think it was interesting in a slightly different way because they have a more moderate mayor now who's sort of tough on crime. But also an interesting person, right, who ran a somewhat fresh, I think, campaign, which I think fits into your point. Maybe it wasn't entirely the ideology. It was the kind of, it was a new face, a fresh face for a city. The irony is the city's been badly governed, in my opinion, for 12 years by lefties after being pretty well governed by Bloomberg and actually, you know, having a massive
Bloomberg's conflict. Last term was pretty shaky, but okay.
Fair enough.
His first two were pretty good.
Yeah, and Giuliani, for all his problems, his first one was pretty good. So you had a pretty big recovery of New York, is all I'm saying, from in the 90s and 2000s. They had a pretty crummy last 10, 15 years. The Bayers were, Adams a little complicated, but certainly de Blasio left. And ripe for, I think, a kind of, you know, modernized new version of Bloomberg-ish type stuff, right? Which is what abundance, incidentally, all the abundance stuff, which is new and fresh, which I like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not making, you know, it's kind of Bloombergian, right? Bloomberg has looked
at a little less nanny state. Bloomberg had his nanny state.
Bloomberg had the nanny state stuff with the big, you know, the Diet, the Cokes, or the giant Coke, Cokes, what was that about?
Yeah, big gulps. Big gulp laws.
You also built a ton of stuff.
To your point about the fact that there could be, and I made this point earlier, but I just want to put a finer point on it. And for all of the happy Zoran people in the comments who, you know, are like a moth to a flame to wanting to see the Denver Trumpers react to their Democratic Socialist victory. Again, an unbelievable victory for a total upstart against all this money and name, power, and establishment. He's going to end up with like 43, 44%, 42% or something on the first ballot in New York fucking City. And so like the thing, the takeaway here needs to be that like that energy that Zoran brought has to be translated into other parts of the country because the you know, the voting electorate makeup. Where were his best precincts? Bed-Stuy. And, like the type of people that live in Ridgewood and Bushwick and East Williamsburg and Greenpoint. Some of my pals live
That's
in all these
probably
places.
Where you hang out? So where do you? Don't you? The last time we were up in New York.
I was in Williamsburg.
You were staying in some hipster place in Brooklyn.
I was staying at Blythe in Williamsburg. I love Williamsburg. I love all these places. East Village. Like this, is where all my pals are. Not the, the makeup of the voter makeup is going to be different in Grand Rapids and Green Bay and whatever, like the, you know, Phoenix and the other swing areas. And so the Democrats are going to need to find a way to channel the type of campaign Zohran won and his focus on working class concerns, also with some policy views different that are going to be able to appeal to the middle of the country. And so I just think that's the takeaway. Whether people will learn that lesson or not, I don't know. I think probably the establishment Democrats will take away that it was Andrew Cuomo's fault and there's nothing they could do. And they just took their 20% cut on the ads and move on to the next race. And the Democratic Socialists will be like, see, if only we ran Democratic Socialists everywhere, we would win in Nebraska. So I'm worried that people will take away the wrong message. But I think the right message is that Zohran did something right on his campaign tactics and his economic message, and maybe he can crib from that for something a little bit different in the rest of the country.
I mean, it's a Big Ten party. You got to say the two gubernatorial nominees this year and states that are, I was looking at, probably, that are slightly bigger than New York City, but only slightly bigger as states. You know what I mean? So they're three almost equivalent electorates, you might say. Are Spanberger and Abigail Smith here in Virginia. So I'm luckily not a New York. I'm born in New York. I love New York, but I get to vote for Spanberger, and I don't have to grapple with these.
You don't have to grapple
with these problems of democratic socialists. Oh my God,
and intifadas.
Spanberger's not for globalizing the intifada. And Mikey Sherrill
and I don't think them. I think Mikey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger are against intifada, just as a general standpoint.
I think. Spanberger, Sherrill, and. Zohran. I mean, it's an interesting mix of candidates. They're all actually, I will say this though, I mean, Spanberger maybe is a little, well, she's not really, none of them was a career politician in the sense of 20 years. I mean, he's too young to have been. And the other two came out of the intelligence agency and Spanberger's place in the military, a case in the military and Mikey Sherrill's. So three, I'm going to say citizen politicians, that's a little pretentious, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Running pretty authentically. Those two began in 2018 because they couldn't stand what Trump was doing to the country. I think Zohran's a little more always been thinking about politics, it seems like, for several years, but still he saw the moment and went for it. So I think that's not a bad model, you know? Let's not nominate. Democrats would be better off not nominating the guy who served for 27 years in the state legislature, worked his way up, and has met, not offended anyone. The donor, and the donors think he's good because he already has high name ID because he's run two or three times. Maybe he's run statewide and lost once, but it's always good. It's once you've run, lost once, you got the name ID so you can run again. I have to. My friend Michael Wood, whom you know, I've been in touch with, who's thinking of running, and I think it's likely to actually for the Democratic nomination for Senate in Texas, having lost a congressional race as a Trump Republican 4 or 5 years ago. I have to ask him, he's not anything close to a Democratic Socialist. He's an ever Trump ex Republican, would consider himself a Harry Truman, Scoop Jackson Democrat. I'm curious to ask him, and I'm going to text him when we get off, and he may be watching us. Is he like appalled by this? Because, oh my God, now if he were, you know, the Democratic Party has a Democratic Socialist, there might be a Democratic Socialist Democrat as the mayor of the nation's largest city, a city he went to college in, actually, NYU. Or is he sort of think, you know what, I'm of course going to run as a, you know, ex-military, ex-Republican, Harry Truman, Scoop Jackson Democrat, but in a way this cheers me up, right, that he won. I'm very curious to see what Michael and people like Michael
It is going to take different types of candidates. It's something I keep saying, like the Democrats have a very different coalition. Republicans can run homogeneous candidates. If the Democrats have any fucking hope of getting the Senate back, they're going to have to win in places like Iowa and Ohio and Texas. That's not going to be people like Zohran. But also, if the Democrats want to not continue to lose ground with young people, like they're going to have to come up with candidates like Zohran, who's able to, who does, you know, resonate and who is more natural and native to, you know, kind of the modes of communication. So that'll be interesting. It's been a good chat. What a night. Who the fuck knows, huh? Zohran Mamdani looks like he's probably the favorite to be the next mayor of New York. He'll have an interesting general election with Eric Adams. Everybody, thanks for hanging out. Went longer than I thought we could, but there's just so much to chew over here. Cam's in the comments. Obviously, he's not going to let him on. Okay. There were some people that wanted him to be on. Obviously, we're not going to let him on in this evening, but I appreciate him monitoring us. If you want to be a YouTube Plus subscriber, you should do that because I don't know, who knows, Bill Kristol After Dark might be the next thing for YouTube Plus subscribers only. So please join us for that. I'll be back for a pod tomorrow with Derek Thompson. We'll have much more analysis on this. Appreciate you all for tuning in. We'll see you soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.